My name is Gail McWilliams, and I am so pleased to be here today. Dallas is our home base. You can get anywhere fast in the nation out of Dallas with two airports. The times, though, that I get to be with my own people here in my city that I love is just really an honor. So thank you for being here today. You know what? When I think about MPI, it used to be Meeting Planners International. Now it's Meeting Professionals International, so I'm glad you got to step up one step, right? Now that you're all professionals, I guess you were just practicing before, right? But I want to tell you not only a story today, but I want to leave you with something that hopefully could be life-changing or at least open your eyes a little bit more than you've ever seen before. I'm originally from the Midwest, where I learned how to speak normal. Then I moved to Dallas in 2000, and that's when I learned a whole new way of talking. You know, like fixin' and kind, night, and all those things that we use here. Y'all comes pretty natural anymore. And it's perfect if you don't know anyone, you just call them Bubba. And they're married to Bubette, and they got little bubbies, right, running around everywhere. And one term that I learned when I first came to Texas was a friend challenged me one day, and he said, "But when are you going to learn true Texan?" And I said, "Well, what would that be?" He said, "Well, it's the word big O. Park a big O truck and that big O tree, we'll have big O time." And my desire today is that this would be a big O event for you to truly see where you have been placed and the difference it can make, and not only today, but in a generation. When I talk to people all the time, and you'll hear more about my story in a second, I find that most people are living life based only on what they see, which is limited and disappointing. But when you begin to live with vision, hey, the sky's the limit. Nothing can hold you back except for maybe you. And isn't that usually the case? We're our biggest enemies. We oppose ourselves. So I have a question to start out with today, and the question is, have you ever been stuck? You can't live in Dallas and never have been stuck. You've been stuck on the tollway. You've been stuck in a long line. Flying out of Dallas, I'm stuck all the time, either missing a flight or TSA or something going on. But have you ever felt stuck when maybe everything seems fine around you? And yet it's that feeling that you have within. You feel stuck. I want to submit to you that if you feel stuck, you'll live stuck. And really, it's a matter of a mindset. If you're stuck, then you feel like things are out of your reach. Nothing can change. But when you begin to see that you've been strategically positioned for this hour, life will never be the same. Every opportunity, every job, every position, every meeting, every event, every person you come in contact, it will take on a new meaning. So what does it mean? And how do you choose between stuck or positioned? When I talk about being stuck or positioned, I must tell you the answer to this question from the very beginning. Stuck and positioned are actually the same exact place. You say, well, how can that be? What do you mean I feel stuck and now you're telling me I'm positioned? That doesn't even make sense. It's the same place. Yeah, it's all about your attitude and your outlook. I tell people constantly, I'm not moved by what you look like, the title you have, what you drive, what you wear. I'm not moved by any of that. What I'm moved by are two things and two things only. That's your attitude and how you smell. And sometimes both of those stink. But you can redirect and you can change your course. It really is your choice. Stuck or position, what will you do in the middle of where you are? I want to talk to you about the word hope today. I think it's appropriate. And of course, all of the nation and the world has had their eyes fixed on Dallas of late. Our city is still in mourning and we are in shock over what's happened. That life could not be valued. And the people who have protected us and cared for us took an incredible hit. None of us can believe the ambush that happened. But we are in a situation now where we can stay in mourning, we can react with anger, or we can turn it around, which I'm I'm hopeful. I'm seeing a nation do that. Where when we talk about Blue Lives Matter, when we begin to respect authority, when we work together as a team in a community, don't you know that in a community there's not just one person or one organization that has the answer to everything and can change things? It's all of us, each of us individually, together make a community. And each of us have a responsibility. And each of us have the opportunity. And we can say, my gosh, here we are, stuck in Dallas. We're stuck in the middle of a crazy world that seems to be spinning out of control. We're stuck in a divided nation. And you can take every kind of negative line that you want to as you talk about stuck. Or could you simply say, wait a minute, I've been positioned to make a difference in my neighborhood, at my corporation, in this organization. It is your choice, and it has everything to do with your attitude and your outlook. And sometimes, in the middle of all the negativity that we see, you know, even a battery can't run if it's only got negative power. It's got to have the negative and the positive working together. The negative is only that pain. It's only those things that provoke us to say, there's got to be a solution. And I submit to you, you're part of the solution. You are. This is your day. This is the time in history you've been given. Anybody could have your job. They don't. It's you. The question is, will you show up and what will you do to make a difference? So as I talk to you about the word hope, I love this. I love this because for me, hope is more than just a wishful thought. If it's just a wishful thought, then it's fleeting. It might happen, it might not. But what if you knew that hope was a substance? What if you knew that hope dances with you? Hope sings over you. Hope walks with you. Hope is there when you fall flat on your face and when your face is inhaling dust from the dirt where you've just fallen, and hope says, come on, get back up. You can run. You can win this race. Try again. For me, hope is so much more than just a wishful thought. No, it's about more than even a political campaign or a slogan. It's a person. It's a substance. It's something that drives me. And hope is visionary. It always sees beyond today. At the end of all of my radio features, I always end with this. Hey, when you choose to look past the horizon, the sky's the limit. I'm wondering, where are you focused today? And what do you plan on doing with your life? Well, let's break it down for just a little bit. Let's talk about the word hope as an acrostic and start with the word heart. What's at the heart of what you do? That, can I ask, what's at the heart of your own life? Do you even know who you are? Do you even know that you have great value? See, I think some of you have failed to understand, and that's why you feel stuck, that you are at the heart of your own story. Imagine I have an empty canvas up here. And I begin to paint a picture. And first, I'm going to have an idea, a visual in my head. Then I'm going to sketch out something. And before you know it, then I begin to fill it in. And on it goes. And that is, of course, if I were a fantastic artist. But I'm an author. And so when I look at a book or a screen on my computer, it looks empty, blank. Nothing's on it. And it's just like that empty canvas. And I began to create something. And really, what I do as an author is try to take people who can't see to help them see. See a story, see a situation, see something that would encourage them that they've been blinded to before. Your life is the same way, whether it's that empty book yet to be written or that canvas that you've just got to sketch on. You are at the heart of your story. You're at the heart of the portrait. You're at the heart of what you're doing. And for some of you, you think everything is evolving around you and they're the things that are in control of you. No. You have a choice. If you hate your career, for goodness sakes, get out. There's headhunters. There's people looking for jobs. I've talked with some people in this room today. They're staffing their new organizations. That's why we network. Who said you're stuck? You may say, well, I don't think I can look for another job. Why not? Why not? Why couldn't you? Why couldn't you develop? Why couldn't you go on? See, some of you have been living life like you're the understudy. No, you've got the center part of the whole story. Life is the stage, and you're at the center of it. Come on, play your part. And I'm not asking you to be a better performer or an actor. Believe me, Dallas has plenty of those, right? We've done so much Botox here, we think it's our real reflection anymore. We think it's our real skin. We can't tell. If you see someone constantly, they're smiling even when they're sleeping, you know, probably something's artificial there. I mean, come on, let's get real. What are we talking about? You have a choice. And in the heart of it, the story, in the heart of the bigger picture, what will you do with your life? I was standing next to a gentleman the other day at the airport. And I didn't even know him. I just turned to him, and I love people. I love what I get to do. And my passion, though, is leaders. And I'm always looking for those people. But anyway, I was standing there in the airport, and I just looked at the man, and I said, oh, you know, where are you going today? So he told me, and I told him where I was going. I said, what are you going to be doing there? And so he said, I said, you going to work, or are you on your way to go home? So we conversed for a little bit, and I said, you know, I'm just sort of curious. What do you do with your life? And he said, you mean, what do I do? I said, no. Tell me, what do you do with your life? He stepped back, and he said, Mama, I've never been asked anything that deep before. And I said, well, I can wait. You know what I have learned? Some of your best tools that you have is just waiting. To let people think, to come up with an answer. Usually the first answer they say is just to see if it's a safe spot. And a beautiful second question is to say, and what else? Let people know that they found a safe haven in you to begin to share their dreams. Maybe some of you have had dreams in your life and people have just laughed at them or said, huh, you can't do it. Maybe there's a tape running in your head that somebody put in there when you were a kid saying, you'll never amount to anything. You could never do that. That dream is crazy. Listen to me. You're at the heart of your story. What lines are you going to listen to? And if the friends around you are always trying to keep you down, if the friends around you are always trying to direct you in another path, you know what? Find some other friends. There's a lot of people. Look around the room. You could find some great friends in here. People who are going places. I might be talking about your career today, or so most of us are thinking. But if it applies to you personally and what you're going through, then take it there too. What's at the heart of you? What's your passion? What's your dream? I've talked with some of you today before the meeting started. You said, I love what I get to do. And others, you're not sure. You know, is it all about a passion or is it about a paycheck? Because at the end of the day, listen to me, and at the end of the week, there is nobody and no company, no corporation anywhere that could ever pay you for what you're worth. That's the truth of the matter. It's token what they give you for your time. But in the middle of all of it, could it be combined with passion too? I suggest to you, this canvas that's being painted on, this book that's being written, if there's something you don't like, then let's begin to change it, because you're at the heart of your story. And when you understand that, that's where engagement starts. Because now you're engaged in doing something that is beyond anything you could imagine before. I'm telling you, there's more. And at the heart of everything, let me tell you first the heart of my story. The doctors told me that I would never live to be 30 and I would never have any children. As of this week, I'm a few days over 30. I had a big old birthday on Monday. Where were you? Why didn't you surprise me? I was looking for you. Well, anyway, on Monday, I turned I had a milestone birthday that I cannot even say the number. I'm sorry. I can get discounts now, but my gosh, I wouldn't ask for them. Are you kidding? Am I giving away how old I am now? Oh, it's a landmark milestone birthday. But the good news is I'm 30 years beyond where the doctors thought I would live. So I could cry a little bit, and I did, because I'm like, gosh, how did I get here so fast? My life is going fast, and yet I've got so much yet I want to do. A wise man long ago said, life is like a vapor. Many times we're grabbing for that vapor to just hold on for a little bit longer. But I made it through the birthday, yay. I thought I wanted a big party, and it ended up being family, and that was great. But what can I focus on? My life's going fast. I have so much to do, be in panic mode, and oh my gosh, how am I going to try to look younger when I'm getting older? Or could I say, you know what, I'm seasoned, I'm ready for this job now. I've been around the block a couple of times, and I beat the odds, 30 years beyond what the doctor said. And did I mention they said I'd never have any children and we have five? Here's one thing I can tell you. Yeah, I had them all cesarean. That's the truth. I say my kids keep me in stitches. 3 daughters, then a 9-year gap, and then we had 2 more, another daughter and a son. I call those last 2 goodness and mercy because I'm sure they'll follow us all the days of our life. Yeah, we tell people we just raised our babysitters, you know, first, and then we had 2 more. But one thing I've learned that I can pass on to you, since now you're professionals, is this, that when you go to a doctor, make sure that you look at his little sign there, because he's got his name big, but in the fine print, you got to read the fine print, because it says, practicing medicine. And in our case, they got it all wrong. 30 years beyond, and 5 children. So grateful. But I must tell you, there was a huge price that was paid to have those children. Because when I was nearly 4 months pregnant with our 2nd daughter, the doctors detected something wrong in my eyes. And so they asked if I would go through all of these tests. Actually, they told me to go through all these tests. Famous hospital in the Midwest. And after a day of grueling, painful tests, at the end of the day, the doctor said to me in the examining room, "Gail, you have to choose today between the baby you're carrying and your eyes." I don't know what you would do in the middle of a crisis, and for sure I wasn't expecting that question that day. I could tell you that I felt stuck with no alternatives. What are you talking about? My eyes are my babies. My gosh, how do you choose between those two? And quickly I just looked at the doctor and I said, "I choose my baby." The doctor stood up, slammed shut my folder, and said, "What a foolish decision." And he left the room. True story. When he left the room, I sat alone. I had no idea what was coming. I had no idea the consequences of what tomorrow would hold. I didn't know what it was like to have perfect 20/20 eyesight, and now, somewhere along the line, I'm not only going to be a brand new mommy to my 2nd daughter, but also I may not be able to see her. How do you prepare for that? And yet I had to make a choice. And I will tell you this, that with each of the children along the way, I've gradually lost more and more eyesight. After all of our children were here, our youngest was about 2 or 3, and the doctors, the specialists, insisted that I have eye surgery. It actually catapulted me into more blindness. I could stand before you the most bitter woman and have every reason to be so. And what would that benefit me, and how would that benefit you? Instead, I have chosen that in the middle of feeling stuck, not being able to see, that I've really been positioned. I'm a visionary in a world that's gone blind, and I'm trying to help them find their way. Somebody asked me the other day in an interview, "Who are you really, Gail McWilliams?" And I said, "I'm a via." A via means a path or a roadway. I'm a via. I'm a visionary that inspires action. I think you visual people are high maintenance. I do. I don't think you believe unless you see, and you're not going to go unless you see the end results. What if? What if you began to live with vision? I'm passionate about vision because it sees beyond the storms. It sees beyond the difficulties. It sees beyond all the crisis. It sees beyond the loss, and it understands clearly that there's more. And believe me, I'm your best friend. Y'all look great to me. You look thinner. You look younger. You look fit for what you need to do for this hour. At the heart of my story, it appears to be crisis. And yet my passion is to help you see more than you've ever seen before. Every day I have situations that are challenging, 24/7. I bump into things. I walk into things. I've walked out with the wrong man before. That's embarrassing. I've gotten in the wrong car. I've corrected the wrong children in front of their parents. That was terrible. I snapped at a kid one day and I said, "Knock it off," thinking it was one of ours. I said, "Knock it off. You do that again, we're going home. Do you understand me?" Just as my children from behind me said, "Hey, Mom, we're over here." Okay. I've eaten things that aren't edible. I have talked to people that aren't there. classic story. I was standing in the airport, headed to Wisconsin to speak. I turned to my husband, we're standing at the gate. I was just telling him this incredible story. I was very animated, carrying on, when the gentleman next to me said, "Ma'am, who are you talking to?" I had no idea my husband had walked over to the counter to take care of our tickets. I was just talking away to him. He's a quiet man, so hey. Well, when this man said, "Ma'am, who are you talking to?" I just turned to him and I smiled and I said, "Oh, I speak for a living. I'm just practicing." Which I wonder, what do you practice in your dead space? I got on the plane the other day and Tony said, "Just move over closer to the window." I didn't know if it's two seats, three seats. Wow, I moved over all right. I sat on the lap of a businessman going somewhere. I'm sure it made his day. You cannot get out of a gentleman's lap very fast at all, let me tell you this. So I just turned to him and I said, "Hey, how you doing? Where are you going today?" Oh, situations, awkward. And you know what? I've reached out to hug people and I've gotten the wrong body parts before. Now that's awkward. But you just don't give up. So you have situations to work through. You're at the heart of the story. You're the center of the stage. It's your story. How will you play it and how will you live it? I find that most people live life based like they're standing on the 50-yard line in between two goals, halted between two opinions. What would it take for you to play this whole game called life with all your might? Which brings me to the second part of hope, which is own it. I love that Sherry today, your valiant president, who you wouldn't even know that her water heater burst, and she just came from a whole wet, soggy house. And she looks put together and even had notes, and she was able to encourage you today. Amazing. None of us knew that challenge. Good job, Sherry. And you'll all be over with a water vac to help her out, right? But here's the thing. You've got to own your place. Some of you are so disengaged, you don't even know where your place is anymore. What would it take for you to own where you are, to own the position, to make a difference where you are, to own it? See, you're waiting for somebody else to tell you what to do. Some of you are. And some of you don't want anybody else to ever tell you what to do. You got to own your place on the team, and you got to know what it is to own what you do, knowing it makes a difference. One of my favorite companies here in Dallas is McKesson. And I had the joy of speaking with them. Jackie, I know, is in the crowd today. And I was going to tell this story even though I didn't know Jackie was here. And when I was in McKesson not long ago and I was talking with their whole group, they're going through some changes. Every company goes through changes. I love to talk to those kind of people because sometimes I think you fail to see the bigger picture. And so I had mentioned that I had done some research on their company. Major company, impacts so many people. Bottom line, helps save lives. And at the end of the whole event that day, there was a woman that came to me and she said, "I will never see my job. I will never see my job the same way again." She said, "When you talked about is all you see is the pile of papers and you see the phone calls and all the meetings that you have to go to, but you've missed the big picture." She said, "I forgot all those piles of paper are actually part of helping save lives." She said, "I never thought of my position that way before. Now I will." I wonder if there's something that you've overlooked in the position that you hold. Is it bigger than just you? Is it bigger than just planning an event? Is it bigger than just taking some care of somebody's accounting problem or being a solution somewhere? Is it something else? Of course it is. There's a bigger picture. Own where you are. The minute you begin to own it, guess what? You won't be disengaged anymore. Because now it's your time to show up. Get off the 50-yard line and move towards something. Each of us have goals. Each of us have dreams. What would it take for us just to take one more step towards those? As we own not only our own life, our passions, our dreams, we own our skills and our talents, but we own what we're doing. Just yesterday, I received a phone call from a businessman in Kentucky. And he started off and he said, "Gail McWilliams, kudos to you." And I said, "Well, kudos to you." I said, "What is this call about?" And he said, "Well, actually, I was out on the West Coast, and I'm buying a new business out there." And he said, "In the middle of all the negotiation, there's some of the staff that we want to keep. But I was dealing with someone who had a terrible attitude about now working for our new company. And he said, I just couldn't break through. And about that time, he said, I got a phone call from you. I saw it on my phone, and I knew that I would call you back later. Now, let me tell you a side story to this. I haven't talked with this gentleman for months, but I was on my way to Lubbock one afternoon, getting ready to speak down there. And on the way, this gentleman's mind, his name came to my mind. So I just gave him a quick call. I thought I'd probably get his voicemail, which I did. And I just simply said, hey, just thinking of you today, wishing you the best, hope everything's going okay. Can I just stop to say something? If you'll quit overlooking people and you'll follow those small promptings that you have, like instead of saying, oh, I thought about you 6 months ago, why not 6 months ago? Send him a text, send him an email, send him a surprise bouquet. Do something about the very person that crossed your mind. It's not only part of networking, it's just a great way to have people skills. And the more you do it, the better you'll get at it. And you never know what doors that will open. So anyway, that's what I had done to this gentleman on my way to Lubbock, not knowing he was on the West Coast buying a new company. So anyway, as soon as he saw my name come up on his phone, he said all of a sudden, he kicked into another avenue of negotiation with this woman that was having a bad attitude. And he said, you know what? I just got a phone call from Gail McWilliams. I'll call her back later. But I want to tell you, she's an author and she's written this book, Stuck or Positioned, It's Your Choice. And he looked at the woman, called her by name, and he said, I just want to tell you that what I'm offering you today with a job, you could either think you're stuck or you're positioned. You're either stuck with all the changes that are going on and they're unsettling to you, or you could see your position with a new company. Your pay scale is not going to change. In fact, if it goes the direction we think it will increase 25%. And you're about 2 to 5 years away from retirement, he said to her, and you can impart to the next gen, the next generation, what you know, and now you've got a legacy happening. And he said all of a sudden her demeanor totally changed, and she said, you know what? I want to work for you. I'll take the job. In just a second, you know what it's about? It's about attitude, and it's about vision. And that story is not just to plug a book, but it worked out pretty good. I do have a book called Stuck or Positioned. But the point is this. You've got the same choice in front of you. The job you're about to go back to, the business that you run, and what you want to do with your life, you've got to make a choice. Am I stuck this way, or am I positioned? Which leads me to the P of hope, which is you've been positioned strategically. In fact, I want you to turn to someone next to you and say, I'm not stuck. Tell them. Say, I'm not stuck. I'm positioned. Tell them I am positioned. Now turn to somebody else and say, you're not stuck. You're positioned. And if just one thing that you could remember from each point is that you're at the heart of your story, make a choice. You get to own it, even being part of MPI. Own it all the way. Volunteer, show up, be a leader. And then when you're positioned, you have two positions according to my worldview. You're either going to walk in and be wallpaper and just hang out and watch everything else happen, or you're going to walk in the room and change the atmosphere. Why not make a difference when you walk in, when you walk into that boardroom, when you walk into that restaurant, or whatever you're doing? Go on to know you've been positioned to make a difference. I could stand before you and say, I hate it that I can't see. But you know what? I'm a woman that carries her car keys. You can say, that's crazy. Why would you carry your car keys? Because I'm a woman of hope. It sees beyond where I am currently. Maybe there'll be a miracle, a medical breakthrough. I don't care how it comes. But when it comes, guess what? I've already got my keys. I'm going somewhere. Yeah. Hope engages you to move forward. What will you put in your hand that engages you in hope? And also, practically, when I moved to Dallas, I'm like, oh my gosh, finally I'm in a city where even a blind woman could probably drive. Have you seen the drivers out there? They're crazy. The other day, I went to renew my Texas ID, and I was met with a totally grumpy government agent. Ever met one? And she just grunted at me. She couldn't even talk. I said, good morning. She grunts. And I said, I'm here to update my Texas ID. And she goes, oh, okay. And I said, I'm sorry, but I lost my eyesight. And so if I need any help, my husband's here. By the way, my husband is Tony McWilliams. He's a cool, cool guy. been married 38 years and we're still on a blind date. How's that? Anyway, I told her, I said, my husband's here and he'll help me fill out any forms if I need to fill them out. She goes, oh, okay. And then I said, ma'am, I need to apologize too. I think it's been expired for a while. And she just leaned in real fast and she said, how would you even know? Well, I just leaned right back and I said, well, the other day when the cops pulled me over. Sometimes the only way to take care of a toxic person is to win them as a friend. Really, a sense of humor can go a long way. Positioned in a place where maybe you don't want to be, you've got to flip it around and say, what are the benefits? When I was asked to speak for a university not long ago, and all their major leaders, not only there at the university, but in their community, on the way to the platform, I just thought of something. Oh. And so when I got up, I said, I'm here to talk today to the disabled leader, the leader who has no vision. See, disability for you might have been something or someone else that you had a picture of. No, it's you if you don't have any vision for your own life. What will you do with it? You've been strategically positioned for this hour. Show up, make a difference, own it all. And then, at the end of hope, I've got to tell you, something is evolving, which is so beautiful. Everything you're doing today is in preparation for what's coming tomorrow. Something's evolving in your life. You're not going to stay there unless you want to stay there. But why would you want to stay there when there's so much more? I was headed into the CNN Center in Atlanta, getting ready to speak, their large ballroom, and on the way in, I'd just come from the airport, so I had my luggage in one hand and my big bag in the other that was on my shoulder, and it had this huge, big revolving door. So Tony stepped in first. It was big enough for both of us, but not quite my luggage. So I step in. I got my bag sort of caught on the revolving door, and guess what? The revolving door is still going. Finally, I grab my bag. I get it out of there, which, by the way, you know, think about it. Traveling with baggage in our lives, all the things of the past, it doesn't help you get down that field called life very well. And it usually gets stuck in stuff. Let go of as much baggage of the past as you can, because that was yesterday's chapter. You've got today's chapter. Let go of some of that stuff. Anyway, I'm in the revolving door, and it's an interesting thing in a revolving door because you can see people behind you. They look free. They're just carrying on, going different places. And there you are in the small, confined place. And then I looked to the right, saw people. They were walking. And a lot, when I say I see people, I imagine. I have a vivid imagination. That's why I'm still your best friend. You look great. So I saw people over here walking. I could imagine that they were free. I'm in this confined place. And I could stand there and go, oh, I'm stuck. I hate this place. I hate small places. Or, you know what I could do? I could just push a little bit. And in the middle of the little push, guess what? Another push and another push. And before you know it, it was a big wide open door, a space, a new place where I was able to step in and go my way. Listen to me. Some of you just need to push a little bit. And in the things that are evolving in your life, seize today, because what you're learning today, you're going to need tomorrow. That's why you're not stuck. You've been positioned. So I don't know if you've been able to fill out anything on your cards or take notes today, but let me tell you two key things that I want you to know. Your attitude and your outlook is key to where you need to be. And then the other thing is, I want you to commit. At some point, write on that card what you commit to. What's your next step? Maybe it's your next step to make your business better. Next step to be more of an asset for your company. Maybe your next step to find a different company. But what will your next step be? What will change after today? If you only come to a luncheon and hand out your business cards, big deal. But what if you came to a luncheon and now your whole world is bigger than you've ever seen before? You got a big O life, and it's time to play it on a big O field, because there's some incredible goals, and one goal after another will lead to a victory and then a championship. What will you reach for today? Listen, I've got to tell you this in closing. One of my most embarrassing moments of all is we had a dinner party one night at our home, and it was wonderful. We'd all had a great time. After a while, for some reason, everyone migrated to my office there in the house, and we were looking at something on my computer screen. While everyone was gathered around, there were seats for some, but not for everybody. So I happened to be standing next to a tall young man that was seated. And we were still just having fun, laughing and talking and enjoying whatever it is we were looking at. And I am a people person. And so because I couldn't see, you know, to get someone's attention or know who I'm smiling at or whatever, I like to use touch a lot. So I reached over to just pat this young man's shoulder, just let him know I know he's there and whatever. But I had no idea the young man stood up. Follow my hands, okay? So I'm there tapping, and now I'm grabbing, going, this is the fattest shoulder I think I've ever touched before in my life. I don't know what I've got hold of. And so most people would give up, right? Not this woman. I'm going to find his shoulder. So I go all the way across his backside. And the further I go, the stiffer this guy gets. Now, you're feeling what I was feeling at that moment. This guy was horrified. I was mortified. And finally, I put my hand down. I couldn't believe it. I just assaulted our dinner guest. So I'm standing there and looking straight ahead, going, oh, God, I hope nobody was looking at us. And he's not moving. I'm not moving. And I wanted to run out of the house, but I had to turn and face my tallest fear. And I turned to him, and I said, so help me, you ever tell anybody about this. And then I turned right back, thinking the moment would disappear and it would go away, and that surely he would know it was an accident. You know what? It's crazy. When you reach sometimes you miss. I did. Sometimes you don't know what you're reaching for. I didn't. Sometimes in the middle of the reach, guess what? You're tempted never to reach again. Keep your hands to yourself. But the end of this crazy story is that guy now, he's my son-in-law. And I got to tell you, the rest of our single kids in our family, they're terrified that's gonna how I'm going to find their mate too. I had no idea what I had hold of that day. And what's interesting, he and our daughter, that the doctors called a foolish decision, the two of them have given to us our first grandchildren. We now have three from this couple. You never know what you're reaching for. It's about legacy. It's about taking a risk. But in the middle of all of it, it's not losing hope. Why? Because hope will cause you to reach for more. And I might end by also telling you that it was about a year later, I was seated at an extremely very prestigious room where I was speaking that night to about 1,000 people. The governor was seated next to me. We were having dinner together. He was there to receive an award, and I was there to be the keynote. And after we had talked for a little bit, I just turned to the governor and I said, Governor, you don't sound like yourself tonight. I'd only met him one other time. I remembered him to be jovial and carefree, but tonight he sounded very burdened. And I said, you don't sound like yourself. Are you okay? So he proceeded to say it had been a terrible week and things that had happened. And I just encouraged the man. I said, sir, I just want to say to you, anybody could be the governor of this state, but they're not. It's you. And you've been strategically positioned for this hour. Thank you for what you do. And he said, thank you. And then I turned back to the dinner. The program was about to start when all of a sudden I felt this nudge. One more thing, Gail, tell the governor. So I turned and I went to reach for him. And guess what story I thought of? Gail, you're going to embarrass yourself. So in the middle of the reach, I just said, Governor, can I have your arm for a moment? And instead, he turned full face to me and gave me both of his hands. And I said, Governor, leadership can be a lonely place. And I understand that not everyone can understand what we've done. But I want to tell you, you're not stuck. You've been strategically positioned. You've made a difference. Thank you for the courage that you have exemplified. And then I said to you, Governor, I pray that not only you will be a success, but then I said to him something that we've always said over our children, a passage from long ago that literally is a blessing. I said, may the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you, be gracious unto you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. For me personally, I am of that worldview where faith means everything to me. And I had nothing to give to him that night but a blessing. And he cried. And I've got to tell you that it seemed like my schedule that night, my calendar said, to be the keynote, but I believe the divine appointment was to encourage another leader. Today, you've come to a luncheon, yes, but I believe the bigger appointment was to encourage you to see better than you've ever seen before, to continue to reach, and to know that you have value. You've been born on purpose with purpose for a purpose. Today is your day. Seize it all. I wish you the absolute best. I can't wait to meet all of you. I'm very approachable. I'll be at the book table to sign books if I can do anything for you at all. And I just want to say also, as you move forward, may this huge chapter of DFW become even bigger still because of quality people like you that'll make a difference in someone else who's really struggling to find their way. May you continue to be people of vision that make a difference in your generation. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. I forgot to tell about the books.
I got it. Huh? They're standing up.
Thank you. Thank you.
President of Finance, Sponsorship, and Strategic Partners.